you. Shalei shilani, shalei shaltani. I'm not like you who didn't lend me, even though you didn't lend me, but I'm lending it to you. Zuhi netira. That is netira. Says the Gemara. So again, revenge is where you give him back in kind, and netira is where you don't give him back in kind, but you let him know that you're still upset about it. Says the Gemara. So that is lo sikam lo sita. But evidently, if it's tsara de gufa, if it's not a financially grounded issue, it's not an issue of property, of objects that are owned or that are used, then is where we say that a Talmud Chacham needs to be no kim v'no ter kenachash, says the Gemara, but that's not true either. It's tsara de gufa loy, when it's more personal, the prohibition or the value doesn't apply. Vatanya, we learned. We mentioned this earlier, if you remember, when we talked about Hillel, right? The Chazal tell us that people who are ne'elovim, who are hurt and don't hurt back, that they listen to their shame, people insult them and they don't respond, they do out of love and they are able to be happy whatever they're suffering. So, regarding them, it says, of those who love him, like the bright sunshine coming out in the day. Says the Gemara, so these people are being personally humiliated. It's not simply a financial matter that somebody's not helping them out. And nevertheless, while the Chazal are not associating it specifically with the Torah prohibition of Losikam Losithar, they're certainly telling us that it's of tremendous value that these people are not are not hitting back. So how can you tell me that a Talmud Chacham, to qualify as a Talmud Chacham, has to be a Naikem V'Naiter, has to be somebody who takes revenge? Says the Gemara, L'olam T'nakit Leib B'Libe. Says the Gemara, the issue is, T'nakit Leib B'Libe, that he keeps it in his heart. So in other words, that he's not saying anything, he's not doing anything, but however, he is nevertheless harboring that resentment. Says the Gemara, that's what we're talking about by the Talmud Chacham. We're saying he's not striking back. By financial issues, we know clearly striking back is an Issur D'Oraisa, or even striking back with words, even if he doesn't strike back in actions. By personal issues, we know that striking back, I love him, vein amol him, etc. Right? This is also not a value that the person does it. But the issue is to not get labeled. He keeps it in his heart. All the Talmud Chacham will do is that he will keep the revenge, so to speak, in his heart. But he's not going to do anything about it himself. So ha'amar Rava kol amavir al midaisav mavirin loy al kol pishav. I don't understand, says the Gemara. Didn't Rava tell us that a person is supposed to be mavir al midaisa? That a person is supposed to be forgiving? A person's not supposed to be so standing on his midos. Mavir al midaisa means the measure. In other words, this is due to me and I'm upset if it doesn't happen. We learned that a person's not supposed to be that way. A person's supposed to be forgiving in that kind of a way, answers the Gemara. Says the Gemara, that's talking about when people come, someone comes who offends him and asks him forgiveness, so then he's willing to be forgiving. The Talmud Chacham, who's not Naikim, who's Naikim Naiter Kenachash, is a person who's not forgiving before he's asked forgiveness. Okay. So that's the Gemara.
What about Tocho Gavaro? You should keep it inside, should be vengeful inside, shouldn't you be the same inside as you are outside?
Right. What about Lysisna Sachicha Bilvavecha? You don't hate your brother in your heart, right? You have something, you should be able to, you rebuke him, and so on and so forth. So here, evidently, we're not talking here in a situation where the person isn't making it clear to him. Right? It's not that, whatever he could be doing, presumably for constructive rebuke, he is doing. The person is not asking forgiveness. The person is not changing. Then you could have, in fact, the permission in an objective sense of hating, you know, sinu ayave Hashem sinu ra, you know, that if the person's not, is just, you know, perpetuating, continuing to do evil, it's possible to perhaps hate him. But here, we're not talking simply about hating him. We're talking about, you know, this sense of revenge, of justice that the person is worried about. How do we deal with that? How we deal with this issue where the Gemara here is putting forth as a value that he's naikim and naiter kenachash?
How do you ascertain the mitzvah lisnoso on certain occasions, make sure where an apikeris or mean or something like that? Mitzvah lisnoso?
So it's easier in those cases, because mitzvah lisnoso, where it's a mitzvah sometimes to feel hatred to a person, we could be talking about objective thing. It's not that he did anything to me. It's that he, just in general, you know, the person represents bad. The person does bad things. So then my attitude towards that person would be, I despise the evil in that person. I despise, at least, again, the bad of that action, within that person, or the bad actions that the person has performed. Over here in Naikim V'Naiter, we're talking about personal. Talking about when it was coming up against him. The Gemara here follows on another statement about that the reason why Shaul lost his kingdom was because he was Meichel al Kavaydai, because he was forgiving on his honor. Right? People said something disparaging about him, not respectful of his role as the king, and he didn't care, right? Which says the Gemara was not a good thing. Right? A melech is not supposed to be meichel on his kavod. He has to be assertive in his position. That's not the king being upset about something which is happening, you know, in Yenemek Velt, you know, some far, far away place. The king, it's hitting him, and he doesn't mind. And in that context, the Gemara brings this idea that a Talmud Chacham has to also have this sense of personal vengeance, personal revenge. What's going on? What kind of an idea is this? And the Maharal does not articulate the question in any elaborate way. All he just says is, "Udvarim elu einam reitzim lekablam ve'marchikim esvarim elu shiyanekim enaiter." They say it's just very surprising. It's not our picture of the tzaddik, of the Talmud Chacham, that he should be a person who has this sense of revenge. What's going on over here? What's the meaning?
If you're not
going
to do anything about it, then really, I mean, isn't the conclusion of the Gemara that he's got to harbor those feelings of resentment, but he's not actually allowed to take action?
He can't take action.
What?
He cannot take action. Right. There's a prohibition in the Torah against an individual taking action. Right? Maybe he can sue him, he can take him to Beis Din, you know, so that an objective body would be able to take action. Right? What's the point of it? Good question. Goes right into the question over here of the Maharal. Maharal's question would seem, on first glance, to be more like, why is this a nice thing to do? But we can expand the question, as you say, to what's the point? What's the purpose? You know, he has nowhere to take all of this anger, all of this frustration. What's the tachlis? What's this all about?
The Gemara seems to answer that point, in that if someone else does something about it, then he should be quiet about that and not. And if someone else acts on it, then that's a good thing.
The Gemara doesn't say that. Rashi says that, I believe. Huh? Right? Well, that's Rashi. I didn't read the Rashi, because it's it's an interesting Rashi. It requires to figure out for itself where he gets it from. But he says, on the nukit believe, that he keeps it in his heart, says Rashi, v'imbo acher lin kaim nikmasei b'kiyum ha'mishpat yishtek. If somebody else comes and does it, and carries out as justice, so then he will be quiet, or he will be calm. He'll be okay. Which, in a sense, right? It doesn't say that anywhere in the Gemara, as far as I can see. But Rashi may, in some level, be addressing your idea of the frustration that, you know, he has this anger, but when justice comes, so then it's going to be good. But it's not still an action point. It's not he has this anger and therefore he's going to bring it to justice. If it happens, great. If it happens, great. So again, what's the value of it, and what is the purpose of it? What's the idea over here?
If I say I'm created B'Tselem Elokim, could it not be that the offense is against HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And the Talmud Chacham is saying there's no room here for any kind of forgiveness.
Okay, so we can have that kind of a pshat, and I believe there are those who say something like that, which is, you know, almost like Eiraisahu Demarta Chalei, which is that he's going to view it. You'll say if somebody did an offense against the Talmud Chacham, especially, that that's not just a personal offense; it's what he stands for, and so on and so forth. And maybe that's what's going to be upsetting him. Okay, it's possible. Maral is going to say something that doesn't necessarily require that strong a leap, but in a certain sense, can be seen as similar. I'm going to read a little bit from the Maral. Ki davar zeh b'shvil midas haseichel b'talmud chacham. Ki roi l'seichel shiyem mamid midaysav. Ki haseichel kol inyanai b'mishpat v'din. He says this is because the Talmud Chacham is of powerful seichel, powerful intellect. His decisions, his thinking is with wisdom and with justice. And if his thinking is with wisdom and with justice, then in his thinking, in the way he thinks, justice needs to be served. Let's take a step back before we learn more of what the Maral has to say. Kel Mekameis Hashem, Kel Mekameis Sefiah. Right? Do you remember that phrase from the Davening Wednesday? The song of the day, the Shir Shalyam of Wednesday. Hashem is referred to as the God of Vengeance. We say, God of Vengeance, you are Hashem. God of Vengeance, appear, right? Go, pay back the Geyim, pay back the people who are so arrogant and haughty in this world. Why should you allow them to flourish for so long? We refer to Hashem as the God of Vengeance, and we want to see that vengeance. That vengeance is very, very important for us to be able to see. Generally speaking, we have a mitzvah, v'halachta bidrachav. You're supposed to go in the ways of Hashem. Persons created b'tzelem elokim. They're supposed to be as much like Hashem as possible. But yet the Torah tells us, v'leisikim v'leisita, we're not supposed to take revenge. How do we reconcile those things? How is that? Why are we not supposed to take revenge? The truth is that in many ways, we would say that the function of the din, of the bezdin, is that it takes revenge. When a court takes somebody who did X and they make him fix it, they make him pay it back. So that is a form of nekama. It's a form of revenge. Right? When we think of nekama, we might think of something which is disproportionate. When we think of nekama, we might think of something which is personal. The nekama, however, when we speak of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem, you should take revenge, is that there should be consequences to actions. And in a certain sense, this is the idea, this is the difference, this is the notion why we, in one vein, will be emulating Hashem. The Elohim, the Bezdin, will be emulating Hashem in terms of revenge. But on the other hand, as a person, as the individual, we don't rush to be able to take revenge. Because there could be a revenge which is more objective, and there could be which is what we call consequences, and there could be a revenge which is more subjective and personal, and may in that way lose its proportion, lose its accuracy. But nekama, per se, as consequences, nekama as, you know, results of actions, is something which has a very, very serious positive value. Every cause should have an effect. Every action which a person does should have a result. It's a value. We say loisikim v'loisitar because, you know, usually when we want to have justice, we have to choose somebody who's as objective as possible within the case in order to try the case. Right? If somebody broke my mother's window, then I'm not going to be a good judge to sit on the case because I'm not going to be approaching it objectively, looking at the evil and seeing what deserves to happen. I'm also personally involved here. And of course, for a person to be the personal judge of it, inish dina lenafshe, a person to be the personal judge for his own case, is going to be something which will call into question the proportion. Hashem, who is emes, Hashem who is truth, so in the context of truth, revenge and consequences are all an expression of truth. In the human context, where we have a person with his own biases, so then it can be seen as something much less than truth. Okay, that's just a, you know, a certain, you know, by way of framing this to understand what's going on. But what it gives us is that nekama is not to be seen as something which is just completely and totally abhorrent and disgusting, like stealing and murder and adultery and revenge. No. Because stealing and murder and adultery have no place. Right? I mean, you're not going to say murder has a place in capital punishment. Right? That we understand it's a different realm. But they have no place fundamentally. Revenge has a place. It's just how you do it. So essentially what the Maharal is saying is that a person who does not have within them a sense of disgust, a sense of being hurt and therefore wanting to see the consequential result, is lacking in the true sense of justice. It's a very, very ironic combination that on the one hand we want a person to be charitable and kind and forgiving, and on the other hand we want and we need the person to have a sense of din. Let's try to explain a little bit more.
Noel Hadam is a legislated nekama.
Right, it may be. It's a complicated sugi. The Goel Adam, is he right to do? The Goel Adam, the relative of the person who was killed accidentally, can he? Is he licensed, or is it just a recognition of the fact that he will likely, you know, feel his blood will be boiling, and he will want to, get the person back, whichever way it is. But yes, that in a certain sense, there's a recognition of that, you know, of that teva of revenge, which is not ridiculous. It's not a ridiculous thing. But in a certain sense, it's a positive value. The Gemara says, and Maral quotes this in his discussion here, Kolaimer HaKadosh Baruch Hu Vatran. Anybody who says that Hashem is a Vatran. What does it mean, a Vatran? A Vatran means a person who overlooks things. Anybody who says HaKadosh Baruch Hu overlooks things or forgives things, Vatran is keep the change. Right? That's what the Gemara speaks about that with Vitur. Right? Kind of thing, you know, if a person makes a neder, that they're not going to have avin hanah from anybody, right? I'm not going to have a benefit from you. I make a neder, I'm not going to have a benefit from you, right? So let's say I'm allowed to buy something from you. Let's say for a second I'm allowed to buy something from you. It's a discussion. If I can buy something that you could sell to anybody, right? Or that I can buy from anybody. Is that called me having a hanah from you? So I go to the store and I'm buying something for $3.99. And it's very, very usual in the store, or you come to my store, you buy something that you give $4 and you just walk out without taking the change. It's not like a special gift because I love you. It's just I don't want to bother. I don't want to bother with taking the change, and I'm willing to overlook it. So that's vitur. Vitur is, you know, big deal, right? It's not such a. I'm willing to overlook kleinigkeit and small things. So anybody who says that Hashem is a vatran, Yivatru chayohi, the Gemara says, his life will be overlooked, or yivatru ma'ohi, or his innards, or his money, different kinds of things. He'll be overlooked. If he says Hashem overlooks little things, better watch out. He's going to be one of those little things. I thought we believe that Hashem is kind and he's compassionate and he's gracious. So aren't kind and compassionate and gracious people willing to overlook all kinds of things? So the Maharal says, Rav Chaim Volozhiner famously explains this in the Nefesh HaChaim towards the beginning, that the idea is that you have to understand that everything counts. Everything counts. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mevater, it's not because it's water off of a duck's back. Who cares? It's not important. It is important. But Hashem made a decision to say that I'm not going to make an issue out of this. Everything has a consequence. Everything has a result. Everything, the way Reb Chaim Volozhiner describes it in his picture which he presents of the world, that the world is a world of spiritual cause and effect. Every action which we do is a spiritual cause which is going to have a real world effect. Of course it will. It can't just disappear. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides to have chemla, to have compassion, so then it's a decision to counter, to neutralize the real result. Vatran implies it's nothing, and it's not nothing. Let me give you another illustration of this. There's a very famous question which was asked by Rav Itzel Petterburger. Rav Itzel Petterburger, who was, besides being famous for having one of the most interesting names to say, but he was also the Talmud Muvak, the great student of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. What we have from Rabbi Yisrael Salanter was really edited, put together by Rabbi Itzel Petterburger. So Rabbi Itzel Petterburger asks a famous question. I think this is probably his most famous question. And his question is, why does Rosh Hashanah come before Yom Kippur? Why doesn't Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, of forgiveness, come before Rosh Hashanah? Why should we sit in judgment to then have it undone? That's Rav Itzel's kasha. Shouldn't whatever, you know, you want to make nice and everything else, do it before? That's his question. So there are all kinds of ways to approach and to explain this question. But let's understand one, which what we're talking about here today very, very much speaks of the same idea. Rosh Hashanah is the day when Hashem takes all of the actions, all of the words, all of the thoughts, and He defines how they would count. Right? Rosh Hashanah is the day when Hashem conceived of the world that was supposed to be created with judgment, where every action which we does counts and has its consequence, and there's no place even for forgiveness. This is the way it's supposed to be. On Rosh Hashanah we define the ideal, and on Yom Kippur Hashem says, but okay, look, you're coming, you're asking for forgiveness, I'm willing to forgive from the ideal. If Yom Kippur comes before Rosh Hashanah, then what you have essentially, in a certain sense, is vitur. You have never drawn the lines of consequence. You have never said, this is the action which was done, this is the consequence which is supposed to come from that action. You've just caused the whole thing to be fudged over, to be blocked. So, okay, look, you know, what's the big deal? But to stand in din, to have a din declared, this is the way it ought to be, that's a different story. You know, you go into a store and the fellow wants to sell you something, right? But they want to give you a good deal. So what do? They write on the ticket, you know, in big letters, $5,000. And then they cross it out and they write, for you, $49.99, right? For you, $4,000, right? What's the idea? Let's just write $4,000. Okay, so look over there. Maybe, you know, they're just, you know, they want you to feel indebted to them. They want you to feel like they're doing you some kind of a special favor, some kind of a thing, right? But in a certain sense, right, there also can be, maybe that example is not a perfect example because of the very personal angle which is dominant over there, but understand what it really is before any forgiveness. You take an exam in college. You get a 62, but there's a curve. So you end up getting an 80. Right? So the teacher writes 62, but curved up to an 80. In other words, don't think that you got 80% of the responses on this correct, or you scored 80% relative to, you know, to it. Your knowledge of the material is not nearly that good. Din is 62. But in the end, this is going to be the result. Understand the ideal, and then understand the place for forgiveness. If we blur the two, if we put forgiveness before we ever declare the ideal, then batla midas hadin, then there's no sense of truth, there's no sense of justice that even exists in the world at all. A Talmud Chacham is supposed to be a person who's charitable, is supposed to be a person who's kind, but he's also supposed to be a person of din. His preoccupation, not as a tzaddik, but as a Talmud Chacham, not as a pious person, but as a scholar, as a person who's studying the wisdom of Torah, is to understand truth. Torah dichsiv bei emes. Torah is called emes. It's called truth. So the person has to define truth, and the person has to have reactions which are grounded in truth. If the Talmud Chacham has no nekima and netira within him, so then his truth is colored. He may be very, very kind, but he may not be very, very strong in terms of the mind. His heart may be strong, so to speak, but not his mind. The Talmud Chacham has to have a very, very strong sense of din. Kol inyonei b'mishpat v'din. V'kvar nisbor zeh ba'arichus, the Maral writes, ki ha-seichel roitza ha-dvorim ha-mechuyovim liyos. What the seichel wants are things that are supposed to be. Ki zeh inin ha-seichel ba'atmeh shu-mechuyov muchrach liyos. V'fikach midas Talmud Chacham she'eino mevater. That's why it's the character of the Talmud Chacham that he doesn't just overlook. Because vitur is the opposite of din. That's called Talmud Chacham she'eino nekem enayter. Okay. Now, as the Gemara goes on to explain, a person's supposed to be Maver al Midaisav. Midaisav means din. Maver al Midaisav is a person's willing to look past it. But the Gemara says that's talking about where the person comes in as Mephiasim, where the person comes and asks for forgiveness. Meaning, at the very, very least, that it's a separate stage. That it's a separate stage. Forgiveness does not mean not noticing. Forgiveness means noticing and forgiving. And being able to be completely forgiving despite the fact that he was noticing. Maver al Midaisav is not token. Maver al Midaisav is real. It's real and genuine forgiveness. But it's a separate stage. It's a separate piece. The piece of Chesed. Comments?
Hashem knows extenuating circumstances, knows what's in a person's heart where a person doesn't. So if Hashem is going to forgive something, he knows that there could be extenuating circumstances where Bnei Adam is not going to know that.
Yeah. A person can, if somebody comes to ask them mechila, and whatever the grounds for asking them mechila, they still would be able, you know, how extenuating the circumstances have to be, you know, that's part of the statement of Chazal, kol amavir al midoysav, mavir lay al kol peshav. The more we are able to see minor extenuating circumstances as extenuating circumstances and be understanding, the more HaKadosh Baruch Hu is willing to do that for ourselves. If we're going to be too yekish when somebody says, yes, in din, this is the way it's supposed to be. Truly, it's wrong. But I want to ask you for forgiveness anyway. If we're willing to do that, so then we get the same measure from HaKadosh Baruch Hu.
It still bothers me a little bit that we're using the term nekama. Gemara used the term nekama.
Yeah.
It's one thing for what you describe makes sense. Look, Din says this, I can't let it go entirely, I have to recognize Emes. But the term nekama suggests, at least to me, this emotional reaction to a situation that isn't necessarily a din. It suggests to me an emotional reaction, not just din. You know, what does the Gemara say? So don't forgive unless you've been asked.
Ask stronger from one word in the Gemara. Kenachash. Talmud Chacham, who, right? I mean, your question is strong by itself. But the Gemara says that Talmud Chacham who doesn't take revenge like a nachash, like a snake. A snake is coming from the sense of truth, from this desire to make things right. The nachash is our classic example, right? Is the consummate, you know, animal, right? Playing on the animal side, of the human being, of the Talmud Chacham. So to say that he doesn't take revenge like a nachash, that's very, very astounding. That kind of a formulation is much more stark and much more difficult to understand.
I'm not sure about this because, I mean, on the one hand, we seem to find a nachash like very angry, but it seems to me that there is, I don't know if it's Chazal or just in general, that there's also such a thing as a nachash, like a cold-blooded fury. Nachash isn't necessarily angry, it's just he bites, that's what he does. So I'm not sure whether it's a question or whether it's a mitigating factor that nachash is actually the answer to the question, that a nachash is not like a person who's furious. Nachash isn't upset. Nachash just, that's what they do.
Reaction.
I don't know if that's a truth or not.
Okay. What the Gemara says is that a nachash damages for the sake of damaging, not for the sake of getting something out of it. The difference
that's
between
rishus.
An
that's usually
seen as an example of rishus, right? Whereas the noch, the ari dores veochel, the ari destroys and eats, so at least you can understand in a certain sense it's hungry, right? But the nachash dores veinoechel, the nachash destroys and doesn't eat, doesn't really get anything out of it. And usually we understand that that's a portrayal that even when it's not self-serving, even when it's just destructive, the nachash will move to do it. You can spin that, and it's a fair suggestion of the pshat in the words of the Gemara. You can spin that to say that over here, that's the idea, that the nachash isn't, so to speak, into it for because he wants to get something out of it. Now there, it might be purely out of viciousness, but over here, by the Talmud Chacham, the idea is, this is justice. If this is what the person did, this is, should be what should come to him. And it's not because I'm going to get something out of it, but it's because I feel this is what has to happen to him. Now, in the case of the nachash, it's vicious. In the case of the Talmud Chacham, it's not. Right? It's satisfying. It's in the case of the Talmud Chacham, it's to satisfy the need for justice. But in both cases, it has this thing in common that it's not to give something to yourself. That can be a fair pshat in the comparison. The Maharal does not talk about it. I want to suggest to you perhaps a different understanding of this that I think is part of the irony that we're having here within the Gemara. I want to just read to you a couple of more lines of the Maharal, which will help, I think, to frame the response. The opposite of the Talmud Chacham, the person who's the creature of seichel, of intellect, that says this is what's right, is asher hu naita achrei hachaymer, is a person who goes after their physicality as opposed to after their intellect. Ein bei din klal, in that person you will find no justice. Shein bei midas haseichel shudin, because he's not powered by intellect, by brain power, which is what brings justice. So they overlook things because they're creatures of physicality which don't really care about consequences. Isn't that interesting? Vitur, forgiveness, can be seen as a product of physicality. Right? The person, because he's not a Talmud Chacham, so he's willing to overlook everything. I thought Vitur was also was tzedek, was tzedaka, was all of that. There's an irony here in this whole thing. And that is that on the one hand we would see revenge, vengefulness, as the characteristic of that which is most removed from the Talmud Chacham, the snake. and we would see chesed and forgiveness as something which is so completely associated with the Talmud Chacham. As we learned last week, the Beis Din Tzedek, right, that they want to do good, and therefore if they're all rushing to say that he's condemned, it's just out of character. We're not saying that they're wrong. It's just, it doesn't match what we would want and expect to see from the Beis Din. We expect from them to see charitable views. And yet, on the other hand, we have that very same quality of strength and justice as an expression of the strength of the Talmud Chacham, and that very same quality of forgiveness as an expression of physicality, of mush, that nothing counts. That's part of the method of conveyance that the Gemara is saying. You know that there's a famous Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin says that people, you know, could have craving for things which are forbidden, right? Shrimp, blood, well, maybe not, but all the other kinds of things that we're not allowed to eat, right? So the Gemara says that there is, for everything that Hashem created in the world that's forbidden, Hashem created, corresponding to that, something that's permitted. Person wants to have taste X, and in item X it's forbidden, he's able to get the same thing in a corresponding item that is permitted. And the Gemara gives a whole listing, right? And I mean, not necessarily comprehensive, right? Burger King is not covered in the list. I don't know if anybody really wants to eat that, but whatever it is, you know, it's for anybody who wants to eat that, we do have a kosher version. The idea that the Gemara presents is seen while in a certain sense saying, don't worry, you won't have to lose. But in a certain sense, there's a notion of zelu umaseh asa elokim. It's a verse. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created zelu umaseh. There's two halves of everything. That you can see the same thing can have a very, very positive thing to it, and the same thing can have its negative thing to it. The Torah itself can be called the Sam HaChaim, the elixir of life, and it can be misused, it can be the Sam HaMavis, it could be poison. And in everything we understand that there is this corresponding two sides. We will likely talk about it a little bit when we go back to the last section about Kishuf, the one that we omitted this week. There are two sides to everything. And part of what the Gemara seems to be accenting here, I think, is this irony of the Talmud Chacham being Naikem v'Naiter Kenachash. In other words, you will see in the Talmud Chacham, in a certain sense, not in action, because the Torah says, but he shouldn't act upon it, but you'll see in the Talmud Chacham a certain Nekimo Netira. And that Nekimo Netira looks like the Nekimo Netira of a Nachash. It looks like the revenge of a snake. Right? We're in the context where we see it as a negative thing, where we see it from one that has no interest in really being kind to anybody else, is completely embittered towards others, wants to be destructive and destroying. And you will see a Nekimo Netira by a Talmud Chacham that in its energy, in its power, it is as strong in a Nekimo Netira as the Nekimo Netira of a Nachash. But it's not. It's the Nekimo Netira of a Talmud Chacham. And you may see a certain willingness to forgive and to overlook at the same time by a Nachash or by a donkey. And you'll say, oh, that's the Nachash, that's the donkey's kindness. But it's not. They're charitable and kind like a Talmud Chacham. Yeah, you could say it. They're charitable and kind like a Talmud Chacham. But it's, boom, it's completely, completely wrong. Completely wacky. It's not correct. Because when the Chacham does it, it's all coming from the Seichel. It's all coming from the sources of wisdom and of goodness. And you could have something which appears like that, but it's very, very much not the case. this is an idea which, again, the Maharal doesn't focus on this here, but this is an idea which we find in so many places, even in Chazal, in which speak about, oh, there's this sister in the Torah, Hashem, how do you deal with this sister? Because you seem to do this. Right, where we understand that there's a turn on something, that as forbidden as it is in its normal context, but it is something which at the same time has a tremendous value in its proper place, in its proper application. A simple example. Shaul HaMelech, who it would be appropriate to some degree to focus on, because as we see here in the Gemara viewed this as being part of his failing. Right? The Gemara, as I mentioned, the lead in to this Gemara about a Talmud Chacham being able to take revenge was the fact that Shaul did not, people were dismissive of his honor and of his position, and he just let it go. The most famous incident where Shaul did that was in the most important event of his life, which was the war that he was supposed to wage against Amalek. The three stages that we have of redemption when the Jewish people come to the land is the appointment of a king, the destruction of Amalek, followed by the building of the Beis HaMikdash. Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur Sukkos. The appointment of a king, the destruction of Amalek, and the building of the Beis HaMikdash. And the Jewish people appointed a king in Shaul, and Shaul was then charged with going to wipe out Amalek. And had he wiped out Amalek to completion, so then Beis HaMikdash, presto. But what happened? Shaul faltered before he got to the finish line. And he left over their animals, and he left over Agag. Right? Why? Because he was conserving, he was compassionate on the tzayin, on the bakar, on the sheep and the cattle. It's described as a certain chemla. Shmuel Hanavi, who appointed him, the prophet who appointed him as the king, takes him to task for this. And he says, you know, you said that the people said to you, look, why should we do this? Let's bring them as offerings and so on and so forth. Shaul, you have to understand, you're the person. You have to stand for your position. You can't be manipulated by the people. Right? You may be small in your eyes and you may want to be influenced by the people, but you have to be strong. A similar kind of a failing to that which is described here in the Gemara in a different instance. And what was Shaul's mistake in action? Okay, so he made a mistake that he wasn't assertive enough of his position. He was meichel, al-kavaydai, he forgave his honor to a certain degree. But what was the actual mistake? You know how the Gemara characterizes the actual mistake of Shaul. It was that he was merachem al-ho'achzarim. He was compassionate, he was kind to the cruel. And the Gemara says, someone who is kind to the cruel, kol ha-merachem al-achzarim, saifai li-achzar al-rachmanim. One who is kind to the cruel, in the end, before too long, he will be cruel to the kind. And what was the example? Because what happened was, when Shaul became all concerned about the losing of his kingdom to David, he viewed as a looming threat, and David went and was running away from him, and he went to Nov. And in Nov they gave him a sandwich, right? So what did Shaul go and do? He killed out the whole city. The people, first of all, didn't even realize that David was a fugitive, that he was running away from Shaul. And big crime that they did, that they gave him a sandwich, right? And Shaul went and slaughtered out the whole, had the whole city killed. This is Shaul, who started off being too compassionate to destroy the animals of Amalek. What's going on? A completely distorted sense of kindness. What do we get from that? What's the notion over there of one who is kind to the cruel will end up being cruel to the kind? What is the guidance that Chazal are telling us? They're telling us not to be knee-jerk. They're telling us that kindness is also something that requires seichel. Kindness is also something that requires wisdom in its application. A person should be able to be forgiving? Of course they should be able to be forgiving. And when they're forgiving, they should be able to be forgiving in the most complete way, where it's mamash yisirenu milibay, where there's no resentment which is left harbored in the person's heart. But when forgiveness is simply just the path of least resistance, where it's just, you know, I don't know, I don't like the sight of blood, right? Or we're just going to leave this alone. When it's an expression of a certain kind of a weakness, then it will be done indiscriminately. And when it's done indiscriminately, then what really you're allowing to happen is you're allowing not your true sense of compassion to take over, but you're allowing just your sense of feelings to take over. And if you allow your sense of feelings to take over, when your feelings are offended, and that is the dominant feeling, Shaul wasn't offended by Amalek. So compassion took over. But Shaul was offended by David, and therefore he was offended by Nov. And there his feelings took over again. It wasn't compassion. It was mush. Merachem al achzorim is not compassion. It's mush. And mush is not always going to come out in the shape of compassion. Mush will come out in whatever shape is the overwhelming feeling of the moment. This is the track record of Shaul. So what? So the thing is, that Shaul, who did not generally stand for strength where strength needed to be stood for, whether in the kavod of his malchus, whether in saying, this, I'm the king, this is what has to happen, whatever the pressures are from the people, and in terms, therefore, of meeting out kindness and meeting out judgment with proper and a correct approach. Now, it looked like compassion. It smelled like compassion. It felt like compassion. But it wasn't compassion. It was the compassion of the chomer, not the compassion of the tzura, of the seichel. That is an implicit occupational hazard in being a human being. And I think that's what the Gemara is accenting over here when it says, Talmud Chacham being neikim v'neiter kenachash. In the case of the snake, in the application of the snake, it has nothing to do with an objective desire for justice. It has to do with a destructive, vengeful streak, period. But you know, revenge has a place. And in the Talmud Chacham you'll see it, and it may look like this, like the revenge of the Nachash, of the snake. But it's not quite that. It's the same thing dressed up differently. Or it's dressed up as the same thing with a different core. Maybe that's the more accurate way to say it. That's what we're talking about here. You know, the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that David did mishpat tzedakah. Right? Let me. Vahi David Oise Mishpat Utsdaka. David, this is Vavam and Beis in Sanhedrin. David HaMelech used to do Mishpat and Staka, justice and Staka and charity. Ask the Gemara, how could that be? Those are two contradictory concepts. Right? Mishpat is justice and Staka is charity. How do you have the two of them simultaneously? I would say that this is bitzua, where instead you fashion a compromise between the two of them. So the Gemara says like this. No, asom the Tanakama. That would be going back to the Tanakama. So the Gemara says like this. No, what happened was, what David HaMelech used to do was, Donas Hadin. Actually, I didn't read the Gemara correctly exactly. So in Tanakama, the Gemara says, according to the Tanakama, because there's an argument here in the Gemara about judges making compromises. So the Gemara says like this. This is what he used to do. Donas Hadin. David, people would come to him for judgments. He would judge. Zikas Hazakai V'chiyav HaSachayev. He declared who was the winner and who was the loser, who was innocent and who was guilty. V'rosh Nischayev Onei Mamayim. and he saw that what the decision happened was when he decided so-and-so, Reuven has to pay Shimon $1,000, that poor Reuven is a very, very poor person. Right? Shimon isn't so. So what did he do? V'shilim lo mitoch beisai. So David HaMelech went, and he paid from his own pocket, he paid the money, the $1,000 which Reuven owed. That was Mishpat and Staka. Ze Mishpat ut Staka. Mishpat lo ze ut Staka lo ze. Mishpat lo ze shichsi lo imam, and Staka lo ze shim lo mitoch beisai. Mishpat was served because Shimon got the $1,000 which he was owed, and Reuven was, and Staka was served because, you know, David HaMelech helped out Reuven, the poor person, to be able to cover his obligations. So again, what you have here is this kind of a thing, that the tzedakah can take place, but not clouding the mishpat. There's mishpat, there's truth, and there's tzedakah, and the tzedakah is also with a cheshbon, and the tzedakah is also thoughtful. It's not knee-jerk, it's not the tzedakah of the chaymer. Right? So the same way, again, you could say that this person is doing revenge like a snake, but it's fundamentally different because he's a Talmud Chacham. We're just saying it looks like a snake. We will say, we'll look around and we'll say, those people, they're doing charity like the greatest tzaddikim. But it may not be charity like the greatest tzaddikim. It may be mush. It may not be a charity with seichel. Right? Person could go and be meiser nefesh to do a chveis, a needle exchange. I'm not taking a position. I don't know what's right and wrong over there. But, you know, some people would say that that's a terrible, terrible lack of tzedakah. Here they are, they're going, and they're being very, very kind. They want the people to have clean needles as they kill themselves by shooting themselves with heroin. Right? So they're doing chesed like Avram Avinu. Right? One might say that. They're doing chesed like Avram Avinu. Why? Because it's their chesed, and it dresses up like the chesed of Avram Avinu, but it's mush. And the Talmud Chacham is being naikim and naiter. He's doing revenge like a nachash. But it's the nakima and netira of the Talmud Chacham. It's a different story.
So is the idea that the nachash was somebody who was sly, that he gave one appearance, but his kavanah was really something else. So the Talmud Chacham, when he does the kavanah netira, he's supposed to be making it look like this is what it is nekama, because that's what's deserving to the person, or coming to the person, that's what's needed for the situation. But it's not because he feels like it has to be being done. It's the seichel is defining this is what should be done in this situation.
I wasn't thinking of that. I hear it's a nice addition. Additional aspect that can be said here. I don't know that we're comparing the Chacham's masquerade. It looks as if it's personal, but it's not, to the Nachash's ability also to slither and to hide himself. But certainly we're saying that this is not the sense of personal hurt of the Talmud Chacham, but it's the sense of justice of the Talmud Chacham. Nevertheless, he's not the one to carry it out, because it could look like it's really a nachash. It could look like it's really a snake. But if he's not offended, if he's offended and he decides to forgive, no, great. If it's appropriate, if the person shows some forgiveness and some remorse and asks forgiveness, so fine, great. That was part of what it is. So midas, can't be instinctive. This is not an unfamiliar concept, I think. As we all know, when explained by many, that when, Avram Avinu, who was chesed, had all these nisyonos, had all these challenges, which really ran counter to midas ha-chesed, right? That he had to go everything from sending away one child to try to slaughter another, to leave his aging, elderly parents, and all of these things, was because it had to be turned from maybe just an instinctive kind of a chesed to a thoughtful kind of a chesed which is governed by rules and boundaries of how it is supposed to be applied. A person who's just pure chesed would have a hard time with disciplining their child. And that doesn't mean that they're a real Baal chesed. It means that they're a Baal mush chesed. Right? When a person wants to be a complete and total Baal chesed, they're going to be able to give the carrot and I'm not going to say the stick, but whatever it means, the proverbial stick, not the actual stick, but to be able to know when what needs to happen has to happen, when chesed is not this way. So just to close, you know, last week where we learned about the Beis Din and we said, oh, they're not really functioning as a Beis Din because, you know, this lack of tzedakah. So it's an interesting thing to put these two morals together. Because, you know, here the morale is speaking about the sense of justice. But if you remember that the person who at the core wants to be kind and at the same time wants to be true, so in the process of truth, they will still be looking at it in a kindly way. And you're going to understand that the kindness, which is an overwhelming thing within the person, at the same time as that kindness is tempered by truth, doesn't mean that it'll say, let's get this guy out of here, let's get this guy, let's save him. But let's perhaps look for reasons why, in truth, he should be innocent.
Kindness needs to be justified.
That's correct. A justified kindness. A justified kindness. Like we speak about with Hashem does Rachamim Bedin. You know, it's a justified kindness. Okay.
Somebody I always think of that as justice shalt thou pursue.
Yes.
We even claim that tzedakah is not charity, but tzedakah is justice.
The use of the term tzedakah for charity and for justice is very, very unusual. I mean, it's a very, very difficult thing. It's I can't satisfactorily answer you. If there's an overlap of terms between tzedakah as charity and tzedakah as justice, and it's obviously a very, very deliberate overlapping of those terms, and there are different explanations, but it ends up many times being hard to figure out, for me at least, an interpretation where it is. But here in the Gemara, it certainly was referring to the tzedakah, not as the twin of Mishpat, but as the counter of Mishpat.
One last question. So what is the bottom line on terms of lo sikum lo sitor, that I should not have this sense of justice?
Lo sikum lo sitor means that a person should never act on their sense of having been hurt. They're not supposed to act on it, whether they were hurt financially, whether they were hurt physically, etc. You don't act on it. Does that mean that you're not upset about it? No. Leisitar in itself, even though leisitar means not to harbor the grudge, right? He's saying, no, it doesn't mean that. Now, the morale, I want to tell you, you have to be very, very careful, and again, even in the Gemara, the Natir Leibolibe, you have to understand what it means, because simply it's understood leisitar means you don't even keep it in your heart. And, you know, some explain the idea of not taking revenge, not bearing grudges, because why are you upset at him? If it happens, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted it to happen. Right? It's not a personal thing from that person to you. But in the Gemara, where it says that the Talmud Chacham keeps it in his heart, I think one still has to say that there's this sort of objectivity to it. When the person is offended by the truth of it, it's one thing. When a person is offended by the personal hurt of it, that's something else. It's like Yosef told the brothers, made it clear to the brothers, I'm not upset at you because you hurt me. Does that mean, because Hashem hurt me, does that mean that the brothers didn't deserve justice? We know that they deserve justice. We know that they deserve punishment. We know that ultimately the Jewish people suffered for what they did. They deserve punishment, but it wasn't personally transposed. The Talmud Chacham can't remove himself from that completely. Good morning.